All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode. This is number 39 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I am Russ, K5TUX. I'm broadcasting from the Pine Forest Between the Peaks in north central Arkansas. And Richard is not here this week. Life circumstances have been conspiring to keep Richard away from all kinds of things lately. And we're sorry that he's not able to be with us here tonight, but we do have a special guest host who is going to try and quasi-adequately fill the shoes that Richard so hugely wears. Anyway, from the IRC and from various other podcasts, and a new addition as co-host to Linux Basement, we have Claudio M. So welcome to the show, Claudio.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Russ. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you, especially since you were willing to come on short notice, like real short notice, since I said, hey, Claudia, I want to do this in a couple hours, and you said, sure, as long as I can put my kids in the bath and get them to bed before I have to talk to you, then that's fine. So,
yeah, thankfully I managed to do that. Can't cut it real close, but I managed to do it.
Ah, that's excellent. So they're all snug in their beds and not going to worry about having them wake up in the middle and come say, hey, Daddy, can I get a glass of milk or anything like that in the middle of the show?
Well, I can guarantee they're asleep. I can't guarantee that they will do that. I can't guarantee that they'll stay that way for very long. No, they're pretty good. I can't complain.
Well, okay. So if we have impromptu additional co-hosts, we'll get them in on the round table and we'll ask how they feel about Linux on the desktop. How's that?
Well, I'm sure they'd be fine with it. I mean, they run Ubuntu on their PC, so.
So not big gamers yet. Not a lot of first-person shooters. No.
My eldest and I sometimes play a few games. Like we'll play World of Padman, and that one's kind of a first-person shooter, but there's no gore. There's nothing like that. It's all like, you know, you shoot like paintballs and all this kind of weird stuff. But it's a pretty cool game. I think it's based off of the same engine that Open Arena is. So we play that. But we also play Battle for Wesna. So we do get some gaming in.
Oh, that's pretty good. Keep them away from those games that involve like drugs and hookers and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, that's for everybody else in the IRC.
All right. Well, excellent. Okay, so before we get into a couple of topics, let's get a little of your qualifications down. So you can tell us all about why you think you're qualified to be here and to talk about Linux and all of those kind of things. I know that's kind of a loaded question and it encompasses a lot of area, but I'm sure you'll handle it just fine.
Well, Oh, you did ask me to come on, so I think in that respect, I guess I was qualified. Well, I've been a Linux user for quite a long time. I actually was originally a big-time Apple user. I had been an Apple user since the Apple IIc that I got when I was a kid, and I've been pretty much a Mac fan since. Up until, I would say, mid-90s, I was introduced to Linux by my boss, because I was working at a local ISP, and he pretty much told me about Linux and the whole idea behind it and free software and open source, and it really intrigued me, and so I figured, well, let me give this a try and let me start messing with it. So he had a copy of Red Hat somewhere, and he set it up for me on a PC at work, and I started messing around with it. And it was a far cry from what I was used to on the Mac side, but I just was so intrigued by the whole Unix-like environment, and you know, the fact that it was free software in the sense that it was free, you know, as in Libre, you know, as in being free for freedom. I just thought that was a really awesome concept, and you know, you could do whatever you want with it. You could modify it. You could do anything that you want. You weren't limited to by anything in it. So I kind of kept at it. Eventually, I got myself a copy of Red Hat 4.2, and I had that installed in an old PC at home. And you know, at the time, I was, you know, I couldn't afford a Mac personally, so I stuck around with a PC running Windows, and I dual booted between Red Hat and that. And, you know, gradually I kind of, you know, built my skills with Linux, and I became more familiar with it. And I moved through various distributions. I moved through SUSE back when it was 6.3 days before Novell took it over. I was using Linux Mandrake before it became Mandriva. I played with Debian, and then the momentous occasion for me was when I encountered Slackware. And, I figured, let me give Slackware a try because I keep hearing great things about it. And when I tried version 8, it made me cry. And then I was like, well, you know, this might be too much for me. So I played with Debian a bit, and I really liked Debian. And then I figured, you know what, let me give Slackware another try. And so I went back with version 9, and I really said, I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to throw myself at it. I'm going to read the fine manual, as they like to say. And I have to be honest with you, I learned so much with Slackware. And if anybody's ever heard the saying, give a person Red Hat, he'll learn Red Hat. Give a person Debian, he'll learn Debian. But give a person Slackware, and he'll learn Linux. I will tell you, it definitely applies because a lot of what I learned through Slackware, I've applied on all the distributions that I've used, and it's helped me understand Linux a whole lot better. So my main distributions now, and we're talking about since I've started in, I would say, 1996. I've been with Linux. I went exclusively, I would say, 2003, 2004 is when I finally decided, forget Windows, going exclusive to Linux. I was still using OS X, but that was mainly my primary OS at the time on the Mac. But currently, Linux has pretty much taken over that space. So, Linux is pretty much my primary OS. OS X, I would say, is my secondary. Windows is, if I got to do it, I got to do it, and I have no other choice. So, but right now the distributions I usually run are Slackware, Ubuntu, which may be switching, Debian, and I've been playing around with Fedora with this new version 13 they have, and it's pretty good. I'm liking it. So there you go. And I've been involved as much as I can in spreading the word about free software and open source, especially at work. I work as a computer tech for two elementary schools, and it's a very Microsoft centric environment. And at first, when I started getting involved in the community of techs that we have in our district, it was a bit tough because a lot of them were like, oh, this Linux, oh, whatever. They kind of blew it off, but I kind of kept that, and I shared. We have there's a forum that we visit. Called Miami Techs, and we kind of share information through there, kind of like you would on any forum. But I do my best to kind of provide information regarding to open source and free software. But I actually did one time. I had done an install fest, and we had a good turn. We had a decent turnout. I would say maybe about 15 people showed up. So it's been pretty good, and a lot of people starting to use Linux in their environments for different things, as a diagnostic tool, as a servers, different things like that. So, I'm pretty happy with that. And thankfully, there have been other people that have also been spreading the word about free software and open source and Linux and whatnot. So, it's been a lot of fun. Then I've recently joined on as co-host for Linux Basement, which Chad Wallenberg, who's the founder of the podcast, he had asked me if I was interested, and I said, sure, why not? And it was a little scary for me because I had never considered doing a podcast. I kind of figured, if I was going to, and I had been asked before if I wanted to do something like that, and I was like, well, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. There's already a ton of podcasts out there. But I figured, I might as well, let me give this a try. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, and I was right. It's been a blast so far, and Chad has been awesome to work to do the podcast with, and I'm thankful to him for giving me the opportunity. So there you have it.
Well, excellent. And I know that I've been listening to the Linux Basement, and a couple of things have happened to it since you've been on the show. The first of which is that it comes out more regularly, which is a great thing for a podcast.
We wanted to make sure we could do, because we both have families and we both have, you know, they take up a lot of our time, and that's not a bad thing. But it sometimes makes it a little tough to stick with a podcast regularly. So we had debated as to, you know, do we want to do this weekly? Do we want to do this bi-weekly or a fortnight, as they say in over at Colonel Panics? But we figured doing it every other week would be easier for us. That may change. We don't know yet. but for right now, that's pretty much working for us.
Yeah, fortnightly works out for us as well, and I think it works out for a lot of podcasts. I know a lot of them do it. For those who aren't dedicated to it, for those whom a podcast is not their primary effort, mm-hmm. every fortnight or every month seems to be about right. Once you get into doing it every week, it's pretty much what you do.
Right, absolutely. It's possible we may end up doing something like that, because I kind of been thinking about it, but... I gotta go through it with my approval process over here, aka the wife, and make sure that everyone's cool with it. But for right now, doing it fortnightly seems to be the best.
Right. And the other thing that's happened since Linux Basement has taken you on, interestingly, is the quality has gone up considerably. Not that Chad had a bad podcast before, but when you have two people discussing a topic as opposed to one person evangelizing, it always tends to be a little more interesting, and I'm sure you've seen that from the inside as well as heard about it from the outside.
Oh, most definitely. I've noticed it myself. Sometimes we don't, you know, Chad and I don't always agree. It's nice to be able to have that interaction, you know, back and forth between two people, especially when they don't agree, because you get two different perspectives of a particular topic. And something, you know, I'll get a side from Chad that maybe I hadn't thought about with regards to a particular topic, and vice versa. So it's nice to have that back and forth, you know. And we usually agree on a lot of things, but if we would always agree, it'd be kind of boring. it'd probably be no better than having just one person there. But I do agree. I mean, even before I started on, I always enjoyed Linux Basement. Chad has always had some great topics on there, and tutorials as well. I mean, his tutorials have always been very good and very thorough, so I definitely give him props for that.
And it probably doesn't hurt that both of you come from an educational background.
Yeah, we do kind of have that common bond there, and we look at things from that perspective, so... I know recently we had discussed, or at least Chad had mentioned, having to purchase licenses for Photoshop CS5 and how much that came to cost. And I kind of understood where he was coming from, because we have a very similar situation with software like that, where, you know, for some reason or other, they decide to go on a license, per license purchase, as opposed to a blanket kind of license for their software. Like Chad, I've always been one to push free and open source software over proprietary software, and I make sure, I even talk to my administration about it and everything. Sometimes it doesn't go over well, but I keep fighting the good fight.
Well, that's excellent. That's kind of what we do over here. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about, as I went through school, when computers really came into the picture, which was in high school or late junior high and into high school, we started out with Apple, of course. That seemed to be the way to go, because Apple kind of, not that they started everything, but they were the big market early in the days of the personal computer. So educators went with Apple. And then for some reason in my college days, we were still using Apples, and then switched over to, believe it or not, Novell NetWare. So...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Microsoft was in there a little bit, you know, on the desktop somewhat. It was in the real early days. In fact, I'm not even sure when I started out if Windows for Workgroups had been released yet. I think it was still the 3.1 version. Linux really wasn't around. We were using Unix. BSD Unix was around. We had also CMS running on VAX hardware and stuff like that. But Linux was nowhere in that picture, nowhere at all. And it was nice when it finally came around, at least for me.
It was pretty much like that with me. I mean, I had always been surrounded with Apples, and I'm talking like Apple IIs and stuff. I had learned BASIC on the Apple II. So actually, I learned BASIC way before that on a Commodore PET. So that was when I was in elementary. And then as I went to the higher grade levels, about middle school, they had Apple IIs, and I learned BASIC there. But yeah, there was this kind of transition. When I started college, I had already moved to Miami, which is where I reside now, and I was attending the college here. And I was studying sound engineering, actually. And most of the computers that they had there, of course, they were Macs. So Apple was big time there in that respect. But as far as any other labs, they always had the PCs there. And yeah, Linux never really caught on until, at least for me in an educational environment, I would say, well, I'm still really waiting for it, at least in the K-12 area. You know, I think it's mainly the techs that are at their respective schools that kind of make it apparent to everyone that there is something called Linux out there. But at least that's been my experience, and that's what I try to do anyways. Yeah, it's still rather nascent in its spread, at least in the K through 12. But I do believe it's kind of spread a little more in the university space, if I'm not mistaken.
It depends on the university space you're at. I know we have some friends who are sysadmins at Ohio State, and a lot of their stuff is Linux, but a lot of their stuff is still Windows as well. And I know in our area, which is southwestern Missouri, things tend to be Windows-centric as well. And So, you know, I've heard of universities and colleges that embrace open source and Linux, and I know lots of corporations and lots of educational institutions that don't. And that actually is going to lead to one of the topics, and you actually brought up both of the topics that we're going to kick around here in your little introduction to yourself. I don't even know if you realize it, but you did, which was kind of cool.
Awesome.
So, and I was wondering if you were actually going to get to your qualifications, because you rambled on for a little bit, and then right at the end you said, oh, and I'm in the elementary school computer space.
Well, you know what? A lot of what I've done has been self-taught. I would say the only certifications that I really have had are my A+ that I took a while ago, which is probably extremely out of date at this point. And my CCNA that I had gotten, I hadn't renewed it only because at the time, really the where I'm currently working, the district I'm currently working at apparently is not honoring it. So, you know, I didn't really have the financial ability to go and pay every 3 years to retake a test. So, at that point, I had just kind of let it go. I am looking to see about probably some sort of Linux certification. I mean, just to kind of say that I really do know what I'm doing with Linux. But most of my stuff has been self-taught, just, you know, on my own. As far as my qualifications, I haven't worked at an ISP. And then from there, I started working. I had, you know, landed a position in the school district, working as a tech, and just kind of built from there. But most of what I learned was really on my own. So,
yeah, and in that respect, you and I are quite a bit alike. I learned almost everything that I know by myself. I taught myself BASIC on a TRS-80 color computer, Model 1, the 16K version.
Oh wow!
Back in 1980. I think.
Right.
Yeah. There was either a high 7 or a low 8 in there somewhere. But, and then, like I said, when I went to school, the first thing I learned on was the early Macs, 2, 2 plus, 2E, and my friend had a 2C, which he liked, but I thought the 2 plus was kind of cool because it had the color display and all that. If I remember right, I think you could get a color display for the 2C, but he didn't have one.
Yeah, I actually did have a color display for my 2C. The only thing about the 2C is that it was very a closed nature device, which kind of was, I guess, the harbinger for the way the Macs were designed. Because I had actually used Apple IIe's before, and I always thought those were really nice. I mean, you know, it wasn't as portable as the 2C, but it was very open, and you could do whatever you wanted in there. So, which was kind of neat. And ironically, that was you know, the Apple IIs were more of the Steve Wozniak design. So he's always been known for more of the openness of computing, which is something I've always admired about him.
Yeah, I've always been a huge fan of Steve Wozniak. That being said, when I was at the Dayton Hamvention a couple of weeks ago, or I guess it's 3 weeks ago now, something like that, there were many, many people who came up to the booth and had lots of great stuff to talk to us about. We met a lot of great people and a lot of fun and interesting ham radio operators who had lots of interesting perspectives on Linux and open source and Windows and a lot of other things. But a couple of things kind of stood out to me. A lot of the people who came up to the booth were interested in what we were selling. We were, of course, there to promote the podcast, and thanks to the folks at Ohio Linux Fest who gave us about 100 Ubuntu 10.04 CDs to give away, we were also promoting them and giving out disks of Ubuntu. We did that for 2.5 days, and I consider the whole thing a huge success. But when folks came up and asked us what we were selling, and when we told them nothing, and that we were giving stuff away, at least half of them were a little bit taken aback. And I found that extremely interesting. When we told them that there was software, like Windows, but was free, both as a thought experiment and as cashless, they were incredulous. And when they came up and said, you know, how much do you want for these CDs? And we said, we're giving them away. It took them, you know, a few seconds to register it. Now, that brings up some thoughts that have come to me in the past, where people have said, well, the reason why corporations and educational institutions and big business, for example, deal with Windows or macOS is because they pay for it. And because they pay for it, they feel secure in it. They know they've got, you know, support, I guess. What I've heard in a lot of cases is, if it's free, it must not be any good. Ideas along those lines. At the Dayton Hamvention, that thought process was reinforced rather strongly. And so, hopefully, I'm going to throw that over to Claudio, and he's going to say something interesting, and then we're going to have a dialogue about, is the fact that open source software in most cases is free a good thing or a bad thing for the software itself?
Personally, I just recently went through something like this, and it wasn't specifically with Linux, but it was specifically it was mainly with just the free software. I think the biggest problem that there is the fact that people misconstrue what is meant by the word free. What makes it harder is that in the English language, free has two meanings. If you take another language, like let's say Spanish, for example, free as in beer, or free as in having to deal with price, in Spanish you would say is gratis, is gratis. Now, when you're talking about free as in freedom, in Spanish, that's called libre or libertad. So there's a distinction right there in Spanish, because there's two separate words to describe two different ideas. Unfortunately, in the English language, we have one word to describe the two. So the misconception is that when people hear about free software, just in my opinion, and I'm sure others share this too, especially those that support free software, they hear free software. You tell anybody about free software, and they think instantly it has something to do with price. And of course, you know, people seem to have this jaded view of things that are free, because they always think that where's the catch? There's always some sort of string attached, or something's, you know, this is too good. It always sounds like it's too good to be true. And unfortunately, there have been a lot of people that have been taken by such things. So I guess it's just kind of a gradual thing that people tend to think, you know, if it's free, there's supposedly nothing, there's no catch, whatever. I don't know. I'm not very trustworthy here. Maybe there's something I'm not seeing. It's not very evident to them, but it's mainly, in my opinion, a misunderstanding of what's meant by the word free. Just case in point, I had a friend who was asking about antivirus for her Windows computer, and I told her, well, you can look at these now, this, granted, these are free as in just price, so it's not that they were free as in freedom, you know, and this was a solution by Microsoft itself. They have an antivirus package called Microsoft Security Essentials. And I told her, well, you can look at this. It's free. It doesn't cost anything. Well, you know, she wasn't very trustworthy of anything free. And another friend of hers had actually told her about a pay-for antivirus software called NOD32. And, you know, I've heard good things about that too and everything, but whatever. The point was that eventually she decided to go with the actual pay-for software as opposed to the free as in price software, the gratis software provided by the same company that makes the operating system that she uses. Granted, I had given her proof of the fact that this was actually as good, if not better, than the software that she was going with, or probably another software that was recommended to her. But she didn't want it. She said straight out, I don't do free software. Which was kind of funny, because I responded back to her and I was like, you know, I'm kind of, you know, disappointed that you think that way, because, you know, I use free software, and not just free as and price, but in both meanings. I have a very hard time viewing free software as something that is cheap or of less quality than the pay-for stuff. So it just seems like a common thing. And of course, like you said, there's corporations and educational institutions look to pay for software because they feel they are paying for something, for the support. And what was funny is that I actually was given a reason as to why companies, instead of going with free software, open source software, they decide to go with the proprietary software that costs them so much more money. And it's because it gives them somebody that they can sue if something goes wrong. Which kind of, it really surprised me. I was like, is this really why you're paying for the software, so that you have someone to blame when something goes wrong? You know, and I just thought it was insane. It really didn't make any sense to me. And so you have a solution here that's free, that respects your freedoms, that lets you do whatever you want with it. The only thing you would have to pay for is the service behind it, which they do. A lot of companies like Red Hat and Canonical, they provide services for a lot of the free software we use, like the Linux distributions or whatever other free and open source software is out there. They don't want to see it. They don't see that aspect of it, that, you know, they can still, if they want to pay for the support, they can get the same support, but they're free to do anything they want with that particular software. No, they just, a lot of them look at it and it's like, well, we need someone to point the finger at when something goes wrong. So, I mean, it's just, it's strange, and I have a very hard time sometimes understanding especially in the educational system where money tends to be very tight, why there's the choice to go with very expensive proprietary solutions, which in the end may end up being a waste of money, as opposed to something that is free and open and allows them to do whatever they want and fix whatever they want in case something goes wrong and tailor it to their needs. I just have a hard time comprehending that. But I think there is that misconception of free being tied solely to price and not necessarily to the freedom that one can do with the particular software.
Well, let's address the issue of free as in beer specifically. I think in a lot of cases people don't understand the free as in libre, free anyway. They buy a piece of software because they want it to do a specific thing and they want it to work. They assume that because they're paying for the product that there has been something behind it. There has been a team of developers, a corporate structure, and, you know, a testing arrangement, and so on and so forth. And that's what they're paying for when they buy a piece of software. And therefore, if they get something that's free, as in without cost, that none of that support infrastructure exists underneath the software. They don't realize that it's still there. It's just being done by volunteers or by companies who are willing to give up the cost of the software in order to recover revenue in some other way. I want to get down sort of to just a yes or no, maybe, or maybe it's not that black and white, but would selling Linux as something inexpensive as opposed to giving it away for free be beneficial, do you think? I mean, okay, Windows on average costs, you know, $99 to $299, say, for whatever version of Windows 7 you want to pick up these days, whether it's an OEM copy or an upgrade from whatever you've got. And, you know, you can go to a Linux distribution, and with the exception of Red Hat, Enterprise, and I think Novell has some sort of paid desktop version too, do they not?
Yeah, I believe they do. Well, you know what the funny thing is, that you can still, even with most distributions out there, you can actually pay for a box set of actual pressed disks. Like, I know, for example, Slackware, they have a box set of disks that they press, and you can purchase those disks. And the money that's used from the purchase is used to support the distribution. I think it has more to do with maybe a marketing strategy. You look at Apple and you look at Microsoft. They throw so much money into marketing their products and making it appealing to the general public, that they gain the trust of the actual general public enough to believe to have them believe that, okay, I'm really paying for this stuff. This was really my idea. This is things that I'd like to see on running on my computer. That's something that I believe that is sorely lacking as far as the Linux space is concerned. You know, and the thing is that most people look for information like that through TV, through, you know, just through the mainstream media. And the problem is that a lot of us, and we all know that Linux is so wonderful and it's a very good piece of software. I've shown so many people my netbook running Linux, and some of them can't even believe. They ask me, what is that you're running? I tell them, I'm running Linux, and at the time it was Ubuntu. And they're shocked. They was like, I thought that was like Windows or something. I was like, no, that's not Windows. This is this is Ubuntu I'm running here. And you know, they look at it and says, it's got Windows, it's got icons, and they kind of get shocked at it and like, wow, is this what you're running? And it's free. And I think that's something that needs to be shown to them, and so that they can understand it. Because if we tell them, look, hey, you can use this free operating system, and you don't have to pay a single dime. It's all free for you to use. You can change for it. You don't have to pay for any upgrades. People tend to be a more, you know, unless I can see it, I won't believe it kind of attitude. And so all this marketing that Microsoft and Apple are doing, they try to make the general public see it so that they can believe it. Problem is that we all know better, you know, and we understand that there's a lot of, you know, marketing, you know, is marketing. So I think that's something that we really need to focus on without, of course, without compromising the core beliefs of, you know, what the Linux distributions have and as far as free software is concerned.
Yeah, and a couple of comments on that. As far as those who think that the Microsoft monopoly on, like, Dell and other big box computer names putting their software out at basically not no cost, but at hidden cost to the consumer, those who don't think that's a problem are insane, because that is a huge problem. There were a large number of people who came up to our booth who didn't know that there was something other than Windows. I mean, you know, they assume that computers run Windows. You know, that was the limit of their knowledge of operating systems. Basically, if it had a keyboard, a screen, and powered up, that Windows was all there was, which is scary, really scary. But it brings me to another issue, which you sort of addressed a minute ago, which was, and this is something I thought about to myself over and over again, the fact that the software is free and that there aren't that many companies who are making money off of said free software. I mean, obviously Canonical is, and Red Hat is, and I think Novell isn't, since they're up for sale. When you think about what you know about operating systems, look at, for example, TV advertising. There are two companies that advertise computer software. There's Microsoft and there's Apple. And the reason they do is because they have money. And the reason they have money is because they charge for their operating systems and they charge for their support and so on and so forth. So the fact that Linux operating systems rely on the community and word of mouth may be its own worst enemy. And I don't want to bring that up in the sense of, oh, we have to start charging $100 for every piece of Linux software that goes out there, or every disk that has a Linux kernel on it, because obviously that's not what we want to do. But the fact that there is no budget for marketing is a huge detriment, and I think it's a real wall to the progression of Linux in the operating system space. I don't know how to address that without fundamentally changing open source and Linux and the way things are.
You know, I don't think marketing is a bad thing. I mean, we always, as geeks, we always kind of tend to look at marketing as something that's kind of, you know, a little slimy, you know, because you always look at marketing people as people you can't really trust for some reason. When you market something, you're highlighting the best things that you can of whatever it is that you're marketing. I'm personally the farthest example from as a marketing expert that I can be, but I do see that there is a definite benefit in marketing a product. Just like one would market, you know, or put out the word for their own podcast and things like that. That was something that was brought up recently, I think, in one of the podcasts I was listening to. And you know, it's very important to put that information out there so that people can know about it. Because you may have the most wonderful product, the most wonderful piece of software available, but unless people know about it and can, you know, you can highlight the positives about it, it's not going to do anybody any good. I do believe, and I do think that their distributions are kind of starting to come around, at least the more major distributions that are gearing towards the desktop. It's also, you also got to look at who you're targeting as well. I know there have been some issues with the way Canonical's gone about it, and I personally have some issues with that. But there are people that may be open to something like that, you know, and But I do believe that something like Fedora or something like Debian or any other distributions out there, or just Linux in general, the fact that people can have the choice to pick something that would fit them best and not have to adjust themselves to one particular system. Like you said, all people pretty much see when they look at a PC is Windows. All the commercials that you see from Microsoft and from Apple, when they refer to a PC, right off the bat, assume that it's a Windows PC. Never the thought that, it's a PC that maybe is running something else. People even ask me, they ask me about my PCs, if I run any antivirus on my PCs. No, I tell them I don't run Windows, I run Linux. And sometimes I'll get the question, what's that? And it kind of, that's a way of kind of marketing it, kind of evangelizing it. That was actually one of the things that in the Mac world, a lot of people would do, was they would evangelize the Mac platform. And that was one way to market the platform. And I kind of am starting to see that a lot in the Linux environment with a lot of the users. And I think, as I said earlier, a lot of the distributions are looking to go in that direction. It's still, I think, in the early stages, but I think that most distributions are starting to put something together like that. One example, if you look at it, is the Fedora Ambassador program. 330, who is he's actually one of the guys on the Kernel Panix. He's a Fedora ambassador, and a lot of what he does has to do with marketing the platform and spreading the word about the platform. I think this is a great start because you're getting everyday people that are out there pretty much spreading the word. Now, it would be nice if, as a community, we could come together and do something that would be easily consumed by the general public through mainstream media. But I think that's going to take a while. But it is something that I think that may need to be addressed. Linux, personally, I think, seems to be making some inroads. Like, I know that, people watch The Big Bang Theory, which is a sitcom having to do with a bunch of geeks and whatnot. And there have been some... Recently, there was... Ubuntu got highlighted on the show where Sheldon, one of the characters, had claimed that Ubuntu was his favorite Linux operating system. So things like that. It's kind of throwing those ideas to people, during prime time. It gets them to ask them, what is this Ubuntu? And they'll search online or whatever, and they'll find out about it. So, but I think we need to go maybe a little deeper. Who knows? Maybe a commercial. But I do think it's very important to market it though, and because the general public really isn't going to get that from anybody else other than the Linux community itself. So we need to find different ways to go ahead and spread that word to people and show them. There are other options than what are presently given to you.
Yeah, and as far as commercials are concerned, I just thought about it while you were talking about it, and I was thinking the same thing, that, wow, we really need to have some commercials. But if you recall back 3 or 4 years ago, there were commercials. IBM had several commercials for Linux. Yes, they were geared towards Linux in the enterprise space, not Linux on the desktop. And the big problem with those commercials is they were, A, pretty forgettable, and B, extremely esoteric. And I think if we want to market Linux, we have to do it in the way, I don't want to come up with retarded commercials like the Windows, Windows 7 was my idea kind of thing, because those are like the worst commercials ever. And the Apple commercials are extremely witty and get the point across. But honestly, marketing has to be like a sledgehammer. I mean, you really have to hit people over the head when you're trying to bring something into the spotlight.
No, absolutely. I mean, I personally think that the Windows commercials are a disaster. This whole Windows 7 was my idea. I don't know who they're fooling, but I have to say, even with the Apple commercials, early on they were very vague. They didn't really highlight a lot of what their products did. And even the Mac and the PC thing was kind of cute and everything, but it didn't really highlight the products that they had. Now, you compare that with the commercials they have now for the iPad, and you see these commercials for the iPad, and it shows you, they show you what this product does. Mind you, they don't show you what the product cannot do, which is something you don't ever want to do when you're marketing a product. But you know, all of us know that it's a lockdown environment. It's a limited device. They do a fantastic job in showing people this is what you want to do. This is what you can do with this product. Those Linux commercials, I thought they're kind of cool, but they didn't highlight anything for the general public. All the people kept asking. It was probably as bad as the Mac and PC commercials. All you had was a kid that was representing what Linux was supposed to be, and that was pretty much it. It was very abstract. It was very abstract, and you know, a lot of people don't get that kind of stuff. Compare that with like the commercial that just came out for the iPad. iPad is this. iPad is whatnot. You know, those are things people get. They can see what they can do with it, and it piques their interest. That is something that we need to focus on as a community. At least, and maybe not in a commercial, whatever, but just some form of advertising or marketing that will get people to, you know, think about what they can really do with their computers and the freedom that's given to them by something like Linux and just any kind of free and open source software. Now, let's take Firefox, for example. You remember that they took out, I think it was a full-page ad. Was it in the New York Times? I don't remember exactly, but I know they had put out ads on a particular publication, and that put Firefox in the minds of so many people in a time where Internet Explorer was king. And look at where Firefox is today compared to Internet Explorer. I mean, I personally believe that that kind of marketing that took place, even just for Firefox itself, from Mozilla, that was really pretty effective, in my opinion. And the word about Firefox spread like wildfire. And, you know, recently we had some commercials from Google about Chrome. This was before it was completely, you know, it was out there for everybody to use. That still hasn't taken up too much. And again, those commercials about Google Chrome were very abstract. You know, it didn't really highlight what people could do with it or what it was. It wasn't anything that would really draw anybody's attention. We need to highlight the strengths of Linux, make it apparent why people would want something like this, and just put the word out there. And I know that as a community, we can do that.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that. Unfortunately, without the money behind it, you have to be really creative about the ways to get that out there. But it also brings up a couple of things. When you're talking about Firefox has an advantage all by itself, because I think the average user, when they think of a computer and they think of the internet, if you give them a web browser and an email client, that's all they need. So when you put out a full page ad for Firefox as a fast, you know, alternative to Internet Explorer, you probably will get some converts, because A, it's free, but you know, when you're talking about Internet Explorer is also free. 99% of the average user out there couldn't care less that Mozilla Firefox is open source. Yeah, so they got a boost, but you're talking about a product that 90% of the average user is going to use. If you want to talk to, you know, if you want to tell the differences between CS5 and the GIMP, for example, you're going to have a much harder time about that. An ad in the New York Times is not going to do it, because you've got a much smaller market share of people who are, you know, graphic designers, for example. And, yeah, they might be enticed by the fact that the GIMP is free, but they may be less enticed when they find out that they have to learn a whole new different, you know, a whole new way of doing things, or it has a feature that CS5 doesn't have, or vice versa, and so on and so forth. people who have already been exposed to Windows and Windows software, you know, it's hard to make that switch, I guess. Which is kind of leading into the other topic, and I do want to get to that so we don't go, you know, for hours and hours and hours about this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'd like to pin down a couple of thoughts in a few sentences that we can say about whether software being free, and I think we should probably just stick to free as in cost, is helpful or hurtful to software in general. And I think the idea is that most people have a problem with something being free because when they see free, they assume it's cheap or they assume that there's a catch. But putting a price tag on something doesn't necessarily erase that feeling. The problem without having revenue is that marketing becomes problematic. And then I guess we get to the point where we have to decide whether we want Linux to even have market share or we want it to be our dirty little secret. Do we want to take over the world, or do we want to be hidden elite? Do we want to be the mace?
See, that one's a tough one, because if you look at a modern Linux distribution, and you compare with something like Windows, or even macOS, the interfaces pretty much employ the same concepts. You have windows that you open and close, you have icons that you click on, you have menus that you access for different commands, and you have a pointer that you use to click to access those different items. I have had people use my systems that were familiar with Windows. They may say that they don't like it because of the fact that they're so used to doing things a certain way, but in the end, they end up being able to do what they need to do, be it open a browser, access information, or whatever it is, anything that they would normally do on their computer. I think this is more of a perception thing. People perceive, because of it's something that it's not something they're used to using, that it's different or hard, or I mean, it's going to be different, obviously, but they think because it's different that it's harder for them. And I'll be honest with you, in most cases, it only takes maybe 10 minutes of readjustment to finally be to a point where you can say, okay, I can start using this right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and thank you for segueing nicely and smoothly into the second topic, which was the general idea that there's a preconceived notion out there that Linux as an operating system, if people happen to know about it, which a lot of people don't, is that it's immediately harder to use, harder to adopt, harder to install, harder to adapt to than Windows or macOS. And I guess we can leave macOS out of the picture because when I went to the Hamvention and talked to most people, very, very few of them, if they didn't know Linux, they didn't know macOS either. For those people who have come to the podcast since we were promoting ourselves there, and for those of you know, this is the first episode that's come out since then, so I don't want people to feel like we're picking on the people who came to the booth, because that's not the idea here. Our purpose was to promote Linux and to get the word out there, and I think we did that. But it was interesting to hear people's trepidations about adopting Linux, those who had actually heard about it, and for those who hadn't heard about it, to, you know, because there were several comments made like, well, we're giving away this CD, and the first thing out of their mouth was, well, are there any viruses on it? You know, so on and so forth. They just assumed because it was free that it was full of malware or something like that. I reiterated time and time again that it's like, not only is this piece of software free and virus-free, but you can actually go ahead, throw it in your system, run it, play around with the system since it's a live CD without altering your computer in any way, decide whether you like it or not. And if you don't, you just go ahead and throw it in the trash or hopefully give it to your friend and have them try it or something, and then go back to whatever Windows proprietary software you happen to like. That seemed to alleviate many fears about the software. You know, that's one way to do it, I suppose, is literally making it easier and getting that word out that it is easier. And I think installing Linux these days, particularly Ubuntu and Linux Mint and the other Debian variants, is actually easier than installing Windows. Now, most people don't have to install Windows because it comes pre-installed on their PC when they buy it. But for those people who have problems with Windows, and those people are many, they either have to do a recovery or they have to do a reinstall. If you take the average Linux install currently and the average Windows install currently and put them side by side and ask the, you know, do a double blind test and ask users which one they think is easier, I can't say for sure because I haven't done this double blind study, but I'd be willing to bet that most people would find an Ubuntu install easier than installing Windows 7. It's really easy, or one good way to get people involved is to show them how they can run open source software that's cross-platform on the operating system they already use, take away the fear factor, and then show how they can migrate to the open source operating system later. However, another problem with that is, since they've already paid for Windows or whatever operating system they are using, whether they paid for it by buying a PC with Windows already on it, or whether they went to Best Buy and bought an OEM copy, or bought a retail copy rather, and put it on their machine, since they've already shelled out the money, they're not necessarily interested in changing. To address the second issue of the initial fear factor, for those people who have already been given the name Linux, kind of know what it is, and have this built-in automatic fear that it's somehow incredibly hard to use because once upon a time it really was, but now, as Bob Dylan says, the times they are a-changing, and things have come so far, are we back again to the marketing issue, or are we at the point where we just have to say, we will promote this by word of mouth. We will be what we will be. We will take those people who come to the fold and we'll be content to be, you know, third in the marketplace, and that's where we belong. I personally am not really satisfied with that, but again, I'm at the place where I'm not sure how to go forward without literally putting some money into it. And where does that money come from? I mean, I'm not sure in this particular economic climate we're going to get a bunch of donations to market Linux. And we're certainly not going to get it through ads. So I'm stumped at this point. Do you have any ideas?
I understand you completely because, I mean, you'd think that even through the recession that we've been through that you would, you know, people would be more open to something that is free, like Linux, and but you know the problem is that something you mentioned is that most people when they go to a Best Buy and they go to some, you know, a brick and mortar retailer or even an online retailer and they buy a PC, unless they specifically ask for one that, you know, a bare bones system or anything like that, the PC is going to come pre-installed with Windows. Or if they go to buy a Mac, it's going to obviously come with OS X pre-installed. The user never, ever has to go through the experience of installing initially an operating system. That may have been true, you know, about 20 years ago, maybe even less than that. But in this day and age, it's very rare to find, at least a brick and mortar like Best Buy or anything that's convenient for the general public to go and buy a computer. Very, very rare to find one without an operating system, let alone it just being anything other than Windows. I remember back in the day, Gateway had tried to get a deal going with B Incorporated, who were the people behind the B operating system. And Microsoft had actually threatened to pull their license agreement with Gateway if they were going to pre-install these machines with BOS. So the best they could really do was include a box of the B operating system with the computer that came pre-installed with Windows. Now, do you really think that the average user who is buying this Gateway computer was going to take the time to pre-install an operating system that they weren't familiar with on their computer? I doubt it highly. I mean, I'm sure they would have stuck with whatever was on there that had software they would have probably been interested in, And that's the situation that us as Linux users and people that promote Linux have to fight against. Aside from the marketing, these are computers that are already coming with the OS installed. Granted, there are companies that do sell computers with Linux pre-installed, and even there was a time where even Dell and some of the big names had computers with Linux installed. The problem was that the marketing for such devices was extremely poor, and they just didn't know how to handle it. They never once asked. I mean, look at Asus. Asus was the first to market with a Linux netbook. People were buying these devices in droves because they realized they could buy a computer that was half, if not more than half, the price of a laptop, that would still allow them to do whatever they needed to do. Problem was that people assumed that this was something that would also run their Windows software. Asus, and nobody, not even Asus, bothered to inform people that what they were buying was completely different than what they had. You know, that even though it was useful to them, a lot of the software that they had wouldn't be able to run on that. So then there were a lot of marketing blunders that unfortunately Linux kind of suffered through, aside from the fact that Microsoft decided to push XP for a lot longer than it did. You know, and those are things that we really have to deal with. I mean, if you ask me, you put a user in front of any installation, and the average user in front of any installation, they're going to have a problem no matter what. I've gone through installations of Windows Vista, Mac OS X, and Linux, Ubuntu, even though for you, someone like you and me, or most Linux users out there, it wouldn't be a problem. Somebody like my father, who is a Mac OS user, he would never be able to install the operating system on his own. And mind you, the install on a Mac is brain-dead simple. But even still, the average user is going to have a hard time performing an installation. I've come across people that, even with the restore disks, they ask me if I can do it for them because they're scared that they might break something. Because they don't know, they figure they don't know what they're doing, so they might end up breaking it. That's one of the biggest things that we as Linux users and promoters, as I said, have to fight with, is the fact that because of the fact that most of these computers come pre-installed, Windows is being thrown in their face, and that is the only option that they're given. I think there needs to be, in that sense, more marketing towards getting something like Linux pushed out, pre-installed, and ready to go for the end user. And the more we see that, we may see some gradual changes in perception. Again, how long have we been have PCs been shipping with Windows? How long have people been using Microsoft products? I mean, that's a long time to, you know, a long period of perception to fight.
You know, I know we could go for forever and ever and ever about this, but it's probably about time to achieve some kind of closure to the topics at hand. And it may be that we come around to marketing, and I guess what we need to figure out is how to market Linux, how to do it cost-effectively and efficiently and let people know what's out there. Because right now, honestly, Linux does best when people don't know it's Linux. I mean, if you look at every device that people think is cool, and this includes things like the iPhone, all the new smartphones, WebOS, the iPhone, the RockYou, 90% of cool embedded systems that do multimedia, that do Wi-Fi connectivity, that do 3G networking, they all run Linux, but no one knows it. And that's why I think Linux is sort of like everybody's dirty little secret right now. Everybody uses Linux every day. Well, maybe not everybody, but lots of people who don't realize it are using Linux every day and just don't realize.
Yeah.
And of course, even macOS under the hood, you know, it's not Linux, but it's BSD, which, you know, mm-hmm. You say tomato, I say, what, you know.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. I mean, obviously, we've thrown around a lot of ideas. I think there's been a really interesting dialogue here, and we have come to no conclusion whatsoever. I think we have to decide what we want to do for ourselves as a community. We have to decide if we're content, if we're content with the market share and the interest level we're at. We have to decide if that's not good enough, if we want to get ourselves out there. And then if we want to become a player, we have to decide where the money is going to come from and how the marketing is going to happen. Because grassroots is great. Open source philosophy is a wonderful thing. But if we want to sway minds and if we want to own the hearts of the people, you and I talking on a podcast and going around to trade shows and preaching to the converted is not going to do it.
And this is the, you know, part of the thing that I think is a little tougher, as at least where Linux is concerned, is because you have a diverse Linux distribution community that are geared towards different types of users. It's very hard to say that we as a Linux community should go and, you know, if we want to get, not all Linux distros are looking to get the end user. I mean, Slackware, for one, in my opinion, I don't think they're looking to attract the end user. If they manage to do so, great, you know, and that's probably one end user that they do want to have as part of the Slackware community. It all depends on what the distribution's goals are and who their target audience is. In that respect, I think maybe something like Ubuntu or Mint or various others that are kind of geared for the end user would open the door to a lot of other alternatives. So I guess that those distributions would kind of be like a foot in the door for the end user. And those would be the ones I would assume that would have to find ways to focus on getting to the end user and grabbing the appeal of the end user to say, oh, this intrigues me enough that I want to use it and know more about it, as opposed to anything else that's out there that I'm already familiar with. Once that user is familiar with something like that, I think at that point is when they see the door really open wide for them and all of the different choices and solutions that they have open to them. But until they get that foot in the door, or until that, you know, it's kind of, if you think about it, it's like a light starting to shine in a very dark place. Once that small bit of light comes in, the more you see, the more you're able to see, the more you can see what's around you as that light continues to, you know, as you're aware of your surroundings. So I think that's kind of how I perceive it would have to be for the end user. Those that are focused towards the end user really need to see what it is that appeals to the user and kind of go for that. Again, without compromising what are the core values of the community itself. I do think it's possible. It's not an easy battle, but I do think it's possible, and it's not something that I would say would have to be world domination, because I think there should be choice. But people should be free to choose whatever they want. If they want to go with proprietary software, that's their choice. If they choose to go with free software, that's great. If they choose to go with open software that's not GPL, that's great too. You know, for me, choice is being able to choose what you want to do. If you want to be shackled to closed software, that's your choice entirely. But people should be made aware of the fact that there are other options. And once those particular distributions open the door for them or shed that light in that darkness, then as they start to see the surrounding community, they start to get more of an idea of what's really out there. And they can make an informed choice.
All right, so... Well, I think what we've laid down is the idea that, as far as we're concerned, Red Hat, Canonical, whatever becomes of Novell and Oracle, had best start promoting Linux in every way possible. And those of, you know, the rest of the community, including the other distributions like Arch and Gentoo and Fedora and Slackware, will benefit by proxy of having been exposed by the more user-centric Linux distributions, and once people are interested in that, they might try and delve deeper and get with the distributions that don't necessarily care but are focused on the power user or the developer. So Canonical and Red Hat, get out there, spread the word. You've got all the money. You know, and proprietary software, sure, it's a choice. But when you think about it, if you think about Dell and Gateway, if Gateway is even still in business, I'm not really sure. And whatever online shops that the average user might know about when they sell a PC, you don't have a choice. And the reason you don't have a choice is because that proprietary software company is showing its, you know, it's basically showing its corporate biceps, and it's muscling the PC manufacturers into excluding every option except them. Simple marketing is not going to overcome that. It's going to take a real push to create the ability to have choice. And I'm not really sure where that's going to come from, and I don't think we're going to solve that question tonight, but I'd like to see some progress. And, you know, I'm not going to be the one who has the answer where that progress is going to come from. Better minds than mine will have to figure that out, but hopefully it will happen.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think it's going to take a while, but I personally do see Linux having some mind share in the general user, as opposed to maybe even the last 3 years compared to that. So I do think there is that hope. There's more exposure to it. People have to deal with more technically inclined people that have been exposed to it, who in turn may expose them to it. So it's a slow thing, but it seems to me, at least my opinion, a gradual thing.
Maybe an eventual thing, you know, an inevitable thing, at least, even if slow.
One can only hope.
Well, I will hope along with you. Well, thank you, everybody, for sticking around with us for this much longer than I thought was going to be discussion of a couple of interesting Linux topics. And thank you very much for your valuable insight, Claudio. And it's been really nice having you here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
All right, that's great. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you get in a plug for anything you're interested in plugging, including Linux Basement, if you'd like to do that, and then I will put in a few words, and we will get on with life.
Absolutely. Well, you can find Chad and I, Chad and me over at linuxbasement.com. You'll find the links to the feeds there. We're also on Identica. As at Claudio M and at Chad Wallenberg on Identica. I don't have a Twitter account, but Chad Wallenberg is on Twitter. Same username under Twitter. And you can also find us on the IRC on freenode.net under hash Linux Basement. So hopefully you can check out the podcast and you know, be sure to send us some feedback as well, if, you know, good or bad, whatever it may be, we'll take it. And come join us on the IRC or on Identica or Twitter. We also have a Facebook fan page there. So if you're on Facebook, be sure to search for Linux Basement and join up. And we're both on there. So our contact information for Facebook is on the actual group name there. So if you want to get in touch with us, be sure to get in touch with us. My email is claudio@linuxbasement.com, and Chad's is chad@linuxbasement.com. So hope to hear from you. Hope you enjoy the podcast. And once again, thank you for having me here on Linux in the Ham Shack. It's been fun. It's been great, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, it's been our pleasure to have you, so thank you very much for that. And everybody needs to go check out Linux Basement at linuxbasement.com, and you've got all the information that Claudio just gave you. And if you want to hear intelligent, thought-provoking discussion like you've just heard here, Linux Basement is the place to go. Of course, listen to it right after you listen to Linux in the Ham Shack. So.